What did I say?
You got I'm Allie and Leah.
That's always there. And Jeff, you will be Leah and you'll do a good job or you'll be sorry. Welcome to Tunnel Talk and No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling Podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Jeff.
Hey, yay. Jeff. Welcome back to the pod.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to be back here.
This is my first time getting to be on a pod with you, so I'm very excited. I missed it last time. I'm always missing out on cool guest hosts because I'm on vacation, so this is
and
my
month. And me, too. Yeah.
This month we celebrate me and I talk to everybody.
That's right.
Yeah, you're holding down the fort this month since Leah's so absent.
What is this, her sixth or seventh absence of the summer?
It's like every month she's gone, I think. Yeah,
she's constantly gone. I think she's going to love this. Listeners, yeah. Leah's going to be really happy when she listens back to this, so don't worry about that. Just to let you know, the beatings will continue a little bit because Anne is going to be gone again next week. So friends of the pod, Anna and Josh, will be joining us. And they are not regular wrestling viewers, you may remember from a previous episode that they guested on. But they will be watching Dynamite this week with me. And I can't wait for that experience because I have no clue what Tony's going to be cooking.
Yeah, big go-home show.
Sounded just a little bit threatening on your part. Like, they will be watching Dynamite.
It is a threat, yeah. It is a threat because I'm like, I'll be driving over to their house and kind of subjecting them to it. And I said it kind of sternly when I asked them to come on the podcast. Like, I was like, do you guys mind being guest hosts? And I'll come over and watch Dynamite with you. Like, it's not... I hope it will be fun, but the energy isn't purely fun, I would say.
it's time for your chores. That's what we say to ourselves every day, every Wednesday. Yeah.
There's a little bit of preparation that goes into all this. It's a little bit stressful. You got to get on here and make sure not, you know, do at least as good as Leah. You know, it's...
Yeah. Although that bar is so easy to pass.
No. She's not going to like that, Ian.
She's not going to like it.
Leah, we miss you very much. Jeff is going to do his best, but he won't be able to bring your special flair to the table. He's going to bring his own special Jeff flair. That's beautiful. Everyone is unique, and that's beautiful. So thank you for listening to my TED Talk.
Except for Jeff Jarrett. He's neither unique nor beautiful.
Oh, well, you're going to be able to get into that quite early on this pod, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Okay, Jeff, you agreed to do our happiness check-in this week. Are you prepared to tell us something that's been making you happy?
I am, and since I don't get to be on here very often, I've got two things, if that'll be okay.
Of course.
The first thing, I just want to give a big shout-out to ADHD medication, legalized meth.
Amen.
Absolutely. I got put on a medication about 2 months ago after months and months and months of the testing and the process, and honestly, just years that I should have, and it has been incredible. It is absolutely amazing. So, if you're one of the listeners from America, you probably know our healthcare system is a shambles. And so it can be very difficult to get out there and get mental health help you need. But I just wanted to use this little soapbox for a moment to encourage everybody to look into it. If you're already looking into it, do it a little more. Whatever, you know, to the extent of your abilities, the help is out there and it's wonderful. And also legalized meth is just amazing for everything I needed it to do for me. So
you are the when I first got on ADHD meds, my doctor put me on Adderall and it was not a good fit for me. It really big anxiety spikes. And I got on the follow-up call with him and he said, this is not going to work for me. I'm going to need a different medication. He goes, people usually really like that.
People love Adderall.
People are usually crazy for Adderall. But it is true that when you find the med that works, be it the first one you try or the seventh, it is a real game changer. So I think that's a very, very good call out, Jeff.
And then the other thing, a perhaps somehow even smaller subsection of society for this one. Live music, as I've berated Anne with the listing of concerts that I have coming up. But if we're talking about something that's keeping me happy right now, I've got I'm taking a week off from work in September, I never do. And I've got all kinds of crazy things going on, all of which have a concert at the heart of it, including going up to pester Leah in Boston just a little bit. But
I heard you guys are going to the Kowloon.
We are going to make the double clothesline pilgrimage there.
Beautiful.
To the Kowloon. Love but that. So that's been keeping me buoyant as well. I used to love traveling before the pandemic, and then the pandemic threw my brain into the pits of hell along with so many other brains. And now that I'm crawling back out, concerts are an excellent way to get myself back out there. It's all coming together. So that's what I got for you on my happiness.
Nice. I think those are extremely good happinesses. And I hope all our brains are healing from the long nightmare of the pandemic.
Indeed.
Just a little bit. Just normalizing just a little bit would be good. Okay. We are going to start out today by talking about some overall Dynamite impressions. This was, I think, the second or third week in a row that we had a Dynamite where there was a strong reaction from some swaths of the internet wrestling community where they were like, this is weird. Dynamite is so weird. This is, well, in our group chat, we were like, Dynamite is for girls again. So I thought we could just check in about how you guys felt about Dynamite this week and this broader question of what do some men mean when they say weird Dynamite?
And some men were like, not just weird, like, this Dynamite was a hate crime against me specifically. Yeah. What seemed to be the vibe from some of the internet wrestling community.
Yeah, heightened reaction,
a little extreme. Yeah, it was funny too, because like watching it, it's like there was so much of the stuff that I liked, and it's like, and people were like, that Leatherface match was like a train wreck, and I was like, oh, I didn't watch it because I was so like overheated from like everything else that had happened that was so good. And so it was a nice little break for me, because like really my only critique of the Dynamite was like that it was like maybe a little bit overstuffed is the only thing. Like, I didn't get a lot of breathing room, so I was like just like vibrating, but you know, it was because I was having such a good time. So
yeah.
And then for me, like, as I was prepping for the show, I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, oh, that Dynamite did feel a little weird in retrospect. And then I saw it on the agenda, I was like, oh god, now I have to defend my thesis. And honestly, for this one particular Dynamite, for me, I'll complain about the Leatherface thing later on. I know we're going to talk about that. But any of the weirdness, I think, for me, was really just they've got so much that they're cramming in. Like, you know, I know you all have talked a lot about Tony doesn't really like to build to the pay-per-views until 3 seconds before the show goes live. And that usually works out. And I'm sure it's going to work out this time, too, because the matches that they're coming up with are going to be good enough. They're going to have just enough story beat to it, and they're going to have the storytellers in the ring are all fantastic at getting you involved. But for this show, it didn't seem to mesh super great for me. I still loved the overall product, but just as one example, I think, you know, you had the Kenny Omega segment that we're going to talk about end with Don Callis there strangling him. And yes, I know the TV had the little icon on. They're telling me that it was pre-taped, like even within the kayfabe world. But then the very next segment, Don Callis is already out there in the ring. Like, it just didn't have that flow, that narrative flow for me from segment to segment, that the better, no, I shouldn't say better because this was a good Dynamite, but the best Dynamites just layer those chapters a little better than I think.
It wasn't like that. What was the episode we got fairly recently, by which I mean within the last 6 months, where we were like, the Elite are back, baby, where we got the arc throughout the whole show of like multiple segments where we're like, oh, that is playing on this and that's playing on this, and it all kind of came together. I agree that it wasn't that kind of Dynamite, but I think I struggled less with it being overpacked because it's like I do need to be forced to pay attention, so that's actually good for me. Do I miss some things? Yes, but you can go back and watch them later. And I did think just the first hour 15 or whatever was just so good. And then we hit the Leatherface match, and let's talk about the Leatherface match. I'm not being a big complainer about the Leatherface match, because it sounds like they got a lot of money for it and they gave it to Maui, and that's actually kind of fine to me. I'm like, that's sure. That's okay. I don't think it was a good match. But I didn't feel that strongly about it. Jeff, did you feel a little more strongly?
I did for a couple of reasons. One, I get to yell at Jeff Jarrett here real quick. Just on Rampage. Somebody's got to yell at Jeff Jarrett. And anybody, I know you all know anybody that talks wrestling with me in the real world knows, but for the listeners, I have been watching wrestling, mostly WCW back in those days, for far too long. And Jeff Jarrett has been a thorn in my side for decades now. So I am primed to dislike his presence on TV maybe a little bit more than I should, but I can still acknowledge that they have found a very good role for him. Like, everything that he's been doing with Lethal and everybody has been good. That said, that man called Leatherface an anti-hero. And even if he's just reading some propaganda from the creators of this video game, absolutely insane. And I love, Allie, you included that article where the people, you know, the author was talking about the most recent movies, trying to turn him into a bit more of an anti-hero.
I didn't realize that at all.
I didn't either. And I love horror movies. I watch everyone I can get my eyes on. Those movies were just so bad that I just apparently blanked that part out of my brain.
How is he being an anti-hero in the new movies? Is he like killing people?
I think they're trying to, the article suggests that the movies try to justify that, like, these people do deserve to die. I would not say that that's really in line with the ethos of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is pretty much just like, yeah, this guy do just be chopping people to death, and it's not chill. They did nothing to ask for it.
No chill. But my problem more with this is the same problem that I've had when the WWE has done similar things. Just I get that Tony gave the proceeds to Maui. I love that. I love that they generated that much money through the Fight for the Fallen charity. But I don't need advertisements in between my advertisements. I don't need sponsorships for matches. I just, in general, the match itself was fine. I mean, it was never going to be a masterpiece, but for what it was, like, I came out of the match, like, really appreciating Karen Jarrett. That woman stood by her man throughout that whole thing. But
it's really her story.
It really was.
Maybe we needed Leatherface match to tell her story.
But yeah, I mean, just the trappings of it being a sponsored match in the middle of a wrestling show bug me. And also the fact that Leatherface's chainsaw sound was effectively somebody at the soundboard pressing theme music for Leatherface to come out to the wrestling ring. It just hurt me a little bit.
I think that my stance is going to be, now, until we get that Barbie corporate synergy, I will not be accepting Texas Chainsaw Massacres. Give me Barbie or give me death. And if you give me Barbie, then I will accept more corporate synergy in other areas. I think that's a very fair and measured take, Jeff. I don't think that is overkill at all. I do think, to most of the IWC, just calm down. Okay? We don't need to. In one of the discords we were in, and somebody pointed out that it probably would have been a better choice to do as a cinematic match on Rampage, and that's absolutely correct. That's what it should have been, for sure.
Yeah, and that actually, I think, would have almost helped with the whole episode, because if you, like, lifted that out and put it on Rampage, then you'd have, like, a little more time for, you know, like, the main event match was pretty short and stuff like that, so you could have just let things breathe a little more.
But was a very tight back half. No, that sounds good. That's good. It's good if it's a tight 10. It was a crushed,
squashed. And House of Black and the Acclaimed was another thing where I was, like, very happy to see the Acclaimed again, but it was, like, this. Every once in a while, I remember that Collision is 2 hours and that they're doing so little with it, like in terms of how much of the roster is there, and it's crazy.
I know. I mean, we'll be checking in on that later in the show, so don't worry about that. Does anyone have anything they desperately want to say about this week's Dynamite before we get into the specific stuff that was going on?
No, except I'm feeling way better about the build because they announced a bunch of matches that I like. So yeah. I'm like, I know. Yeah, this build is great now.
This week's Dynamite was for the girlies because they said, yeah, these matches are women. You've been yelling at us.
Yeah.
You've been screaming at us. And we listened. So, yeah, I agree. I also was like, the build's fine now.
Like, I'm excited for the show. It's the first pay-per-view I've been excited for ahead of time for like a year at least.
Yeah. Well, let's start by talking about one of the storylines that got us excited. This week on Rampage, Orange Cassidy fought Johnny TV. That's not the part that got us excited. Just build into
huge
the exciting part.
Johnny TV fans.
As you know, we love Johnny TV. I think we've met him before, right? I mean, I don't remember.
Yes. Very.
He came out as Johnny Elite and stuff. I thought it was going to be John Silver for a second, and then I was disappointed.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So Orange Cassidy fought Johnny TV on Rampage. Yuta came out in the middle of the match to kind of like lightly interfere. He ended up hopping on commentary, which I was a little surprised by, but I thought he did a good job. I mean, yeah. I thought he was good.
Pretty funny, yeah.
Post-match, the BCC surrounded Orange Cassidy in the ring, and we thought, we're best friends dead because of parking lot match probably, so who's going to come out and save him? Nobody had to because they didn't attack. Instead, Yuta challenged Dosi to a singles match on Dynamite. He kind of dug in a little to their relationship. Of course, they are father and son, biologically. But Yuta has turned his back on his father, so they talked about that a little, and Yuta said he wants to take the only thing that matters to OC, being the belt. So that match opened Dynamite, very immediately intense, especially for OC. We do not usually see that. We got a lot of like chops, mirrored moves that kind of emphasize like this man trained you, so you really know you kind of actually do have similar wrestling styles. Mox and Claudio came out to circle the ring. OC pinned Yuta. There was an immediate beatdown. Mox stomped OC on the dick. I was shocked by this. Just right on it.
That's brutal.
And then we got a series of our classic clown car runouts. So Best Friends came out. Lucha Brothers came out. Eddie Kingston came out. They ran the BCC off, and Eddie Kingston laid down a Stadium Stampede challenge that's going to be Best Friends, Lucha Brothers, and Eddie versus BCC and three men of their choice. What do you guys think?
So psyched. When they all started running out, I was like, Best Friends, oh my God. And then I was like, oh, the Lucha Brothers are also here. And I kept being like, they're going to steal this match from Best Friends. And then Eddie came out, and I was like, I love Eddie, but he's also going to steal the match. And then they announced the match, and I was so happy.
I really want to know what the behind the scenes stuff going on with this was, because I'm not sure. I don't think this was the first line plan. But if I didn't see Best Friends at Wembley, it was gonna be over for Tony Khan.
I think we made our feelings clear in the 20 minutes we did on it last week, probably. But yeah,
you don't want to run that strongly.
I had basically that entire segment. Like, I had Allie's reaction to the thought that the Best Friends might be on the card, like the main card, not even Zero, but the
main
card.
I had
that
card.
I had that running through my head the entire time that the Lucha Bros were coming down the ramp, because I had the exact same reaction that Anne did, which was, oh, this is going to be OC and the Lucha Brothers, and they're just going to take Greg and Dustin and shuffle them off somewhere.
Back into the basement.
When's the last time they were on a pay-per-view, like, main show? I can't even remember.
Oh, that's a great question. I have no idea.
Yeah, I can't even run it back. It's been a long time.
I can't remember what happened on any pay-per-view. I go back and I look at pay-per-views and I think, wow, it's crazy. It's so crazy how much stuff happened in wrestling before we got into it. I never saw this. And then I look at the date and it's like November 2021. It's like, yeah, bitch, you paid for that pay-per-view. I mean,
stuff from, well, no, never, by then we should have known. I was like, because the fall of 2020, like, we were watching, but I didn't know anyone enough to ever remember who was doing what. But
2021, I think all of 2021, I should really have some memory of. Yes.
Yeah, This is so great because, like, it's so nice that they're trying to get as many people on the card as they can because it's like, you know, everybody in Europe who hasn't been able to go to shows, it's like, yeah, you get to see Best Friends, you get to see Eddie, you get to see, like, all of these guys who people like. It's great.
Yeah.
Then I absolutely, like, thank you to the Nashville crowd for how loud they got when Eddie Kingston came out there. Like, it's praise Tony for actually putting Eddie into kind of that position.
Tony would
of importance.
Like to get a little praise, wouldn't he?
But it would be nice. It would be nice. But I mean, like, this absolutely could have been a situation where Eddie, like, ran out and hit some people, and then, like, I probably would have expected Alex Abrahantes to get to lay down that challenge before I expected them to let Eddie Kingston be the one to do that.
And he was wearing that Union shirt, and he was looking great, and it's going to be Eddie and Mox against each other. Like, this is going to be a great match.
It does. It has felt a little recently like people have been prying Tony's tightened fingers off the mic and being like, people must, Tony, they have to be allowed to talk out there sometimes, Tony. If you're letting CM Punk say anything he wants on Collision, you got to let people do a couple just fully normal live in-ring promos.
Just, like, declare what the match
on
is
Dynamite.
For the pay-per-view.
That's,
yeah.
You got to let them do it, Tone. We can't keep living this way.
Crazy.
Oh, and I really loved, like, there was, between Rampage and Dynamite, there was a lot of just small stuff that I really liked. Like, I really, really love Wheeler Yuta being the one to really finally put the sharpest point on the fact that Orange Cassidy actually does care about that championship.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you know, and Yuta was the perfect one to do it because, again, you know, dad and son, they've got that relationship. And Yuta has been corrupted by the BCC to want to go for maximum emotional damage prior to maximum physical damage. So he really is a good one to have done it. And then, you know, the way that OC played during the start of that match where, like Ali, like you said, you know, went directly for the orange punch. And I had something else written down that was a really good follow-up point to that. I don't remember what it was. But there, when he, right after that, like, he went for the pockets, but used it as a diversion to just smack Yuta instead. And it's just, you know, it's a form of anger that I don't feel like we've really seen from Orange Cassidy before, but because Orange Cassidy is the absolute best character pro wrestler alive right now, it was exactly in character for him to do the things the way that he did.
Yeah. And it's actually literally quite rich to have Yuta say, I'm going to fight you for your belt, the only thing you care about. But the way OC fights for the belt is, the whole thing is like, no, I actually care a lot about what you have done. Like, it's like, you know, it's about the belt, but actually the feeling, the emotion, the anger, like, it's about you. Like, that's actually, wow, that's writing in a way.
Yeah. And they did such a good job. Like, OC just seems so much more furious. Like, it's been a good build because he's been ramping up with the belt so much more, like trying so much harder and having all these matches and stuff. And then in this one, it was like, oh, he's absolutely furious, like just from how they were fighting each other. And combined with like Yuta saying, I think explicitly that he wanted to hurt OC emotionally on Rampage before, which was really good. I'd really like it too if they compared like the belt as the only thing only thing he cares about versus like he really cares about his friends a lot, or he did, although like it's been a little shaky sometimes, but I don't know if that's on purpose. But I'd like love it if they went in that kind of direction of like OC caring about the belt versus caring about Wheeler versus caring about Best Friends, you know.
They have really flirted with that storyline or with that aspect of the storyline, but not committed to it in a way that suggests to me that they haven't felt certain about whether they actually want to follow through in it or what the end game of that would be. Because I wonder if, it's like, oh, you have a thought, Jeff?
So forgive me for fantasy booking live on the podcast. No, it's you all saying all that. First of all, you all are so much better at analyzing these things from a literary standpoint than I am. So thank you for that. But it put me in mind of like, what if they wind up doing something where, I don't know, it's Chuck or it's Trent, it's somebody against Yuta or No, I guess this would have to be OC versus UTA for the belt again. But they, no DQ. This is a crazy BCC versus best friends thing. And somehow, some way, like Chuck and Trent, maybe even Sue, like the rest of the BCC have them in serious danger. And you get OC having to give up and surrender the belt to save them the way that Mox did for Yuta at Blood and Guts.
That'd be so good. Yeah. As you were saying that, I was thinking about, remember when, like, Miro, like, got Chuck and he had to be his butler and he was basically holding him hostage and making him say that Miro was his best friend now? Like, yeah, if you did something like that with the BCC where they basically had them,
I just had a thought. I'm sure someone out there can tell us if this has happened in wrestling. So OC has an emotional connection to Yuta, and that's very obvious in this storyline. Could you ever in wrestling do a thing where they're on opposite teams, like they're fighting for the belt or whatever, but someone realizes that Yuta is still a weak point for OC, despite the fact that they're on opposite teams, and chokes him out, and that then, like, he has to give up the belt for someone he's actively fighting. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I could see that. That'd be interesting.
I don't think they'll ever do that. And I think it would be, and I would not like to, honestly, to read the takes about it. But I actually think that would be quite a rich area to explore, is the idea that, like, just because you're aligned with someone doesn't mean that's where your ultimate loyalty lies.
Yeah. And they have done enough with, like, Chuck and OC both, like, hesitating with Yuta that I feel like that would just be kind of like a next step along that continuum, which would be really interesting. It's very rich emotional territory if they want to really explore it, which I don't know that they do, but they could.
I think they want to a certain extent, certainly because we've gotten this much of it, which is quite rare for best friends for and OC.
We have to treasure it. Yeah.
This is our little baby. Do you guys have any thoughts on who BCC might team with for Stadium Stampede?
No. And I saw people floating, like, I wanted to say Pride and Prejudice, Proud and Powerful, which would be interesting, but also feels like a little unlikely to me, but like,
maybe. Just haven't gotten that much of them recently. So
yeah,
if they did it this week on Dynamite, they could do it. But and I'm not against it, but I'm not sure about it. Danny Garcia has been tweeting a lot. And that would make a lot of sense given everything that's happening with Jazz and his previous relationship to BCC.
Although it's too bad that Danielson's not there to, like, get him being a wrestler, you know, but maybe Danielson will show up to do some commentary at Wembley, or who knows.
And
I'd love to know.
I would love to have Proud and Powerful back, however the heck we get them back. I loved them, and if they've mended their fences, they can come back into our living rooms and our hearts anytime. But if it's not like a tag team or a trio coming in to join them, honestly, the only person, like, I can all but guarantee Shota Umino will be there as Mox's New Japan son. But
after Eddie was just his Uncle Eddie, and now he'd be fighting against Uncle Eddie. Rich family dynamics in wrestling.
A lot of family drama between these two groups. Yeah.
Other than that, this is one thing that it's not often that they manage to put something out there where it's like, I have no idea what we're going to get out of this, but it's kind of exciting when they do. So.
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out. Honestly, I know people are just really mad that there aren't more singles matches, not to continually call out the discourse, which we should just ignore, but it's been a little strange to me because of what you said, Anne, where it's like, well, they haven't had a show there. Like, if I pay to go to the first show that, you know, the company that I've loved for 4 years has in my country, I would be happy if, like, everybody showed up. I just don't think that's a bad thing.
Like, and if you only have singles matches, what, you have like 10 people, you know, 15, you know, 16 people max.
What's
maybe
everybody
like,
else supposed
said.
To do? They what's, just they come out and be in the audience or something so you can look at them like you're at the
Chuck
zoo.
What's Taylor supposed to do if you only have singles matches?
At the end of the day, it all comes back to Dustin, and that's what people are talking about.
That's what they're not talking about enough. Plus, like most of these, like tag and trios and stampede matches, like look fantastic to me. So it's just like, oh, calm down, all you little nerds.
Absolutely. Once you're there, you'll be happy. And I think, you know, is it always true? No, but is it a good attitude to have? Yes. When I'm there, I think I'll probably be happy. Okay. I know you don't want to go to the party right now, but you're gonna have fun. So just put your shoes on. Let's move on. We got a lot to talk about here. We're getting into elite territory. So we are going to start with Kenny, who had a sit-down interview with JR on Dynamite this week, in which he really unpacked some stuff.
We were right to want JR to come back to do this, because the things that Kenny said and the faces that JR made, like, amazing. Phenomenal
work. This is the one area in which we will say no one is doing it like JR.
No one
just
is.
Kenny being like, and he was giving me like powders, I don't know what kind, and JR's face is just like, excuse me.
Kenny like recounting his childhood abuse, it was just like, whoa, these are your good memories.
It, you know, it was, it in a way, was richer Kenny characterization than I would have expected, where Kenny was like, we're really going to build out the idea that actually, like, I pretty much was abused into being a pro athlete.
Yeah.
And was never given another path for my life. And I had sent Ann and Jeff a thread that I read on Twitter, just a really little thread, where someone was basically like, that actually explains a lot about Kenny's face heel dynamics, that he like kind of has no concept of himself outside of the idea of being the best and being like elite. So when that's in danger, he, of course, he does become insane because, you know, he had a traumatic childhood.
He wasn't allowed to have parties or friends. He was only allowed to hang out with Don Callis and take powders of unspecified origin. It's not good. It didn't sound good.
And JR didn't even think it sounded good.
No, and when JR thinks something sounds bad, like, that's pretty bad.
JR has seen some stuff in his career, and this was like, oh, we need to get you some help.
JR did talent relations for Vince McMahon, so JR seen some stuff.
He said, even in Vince McMahon's WWE, this would not fly.
But no, I mean, it really, I had to watch it a couple of times because, you know, the first time through it was just kind of like, oh, well, this is an interesting twist. And then the second time through it's like, oh no, this is, this is bad. This is like, oh, it really is. It really, like you said, it shines a lot on the character behind kind of both like the braggadocio, like, not, I guess braggadocio is not even the right word, because he is, in many respects, like, he is the best bout machine. Like, he has managed to earn the right to call himself that. But you've
but, like,
also
when he
then,
went full belt collector, though, like, that like, is, like, the braggadocio side for sure,
Yeah, and then even when he's trying to, like, come back down from that, and you wind up with this ultra goofy weird guy, you know, that gets back to, like you said, you know, if he's been groomed to do nothing but play this game, you know, be a part of the sport since childhood, he probably didn't socialize exactly as much as he should have. So, you know, if this hasn't been percolating in the back of his head and, you know, as part of his character for a while now, it is a very believable addition to everything. And Don Callis is an absolute snake, so there's no difficulty in believing it on that side. So,
I mean, I do kind of feel like, could you get away with this if anybody else was being the Don Callis character? And I mean, maybe you could, but it wouldn't be as good. It would not be as good.
And didn't Don Callis walk in there and be like, Kenny, buddy, I'm like really worried about your mental health. Like, are you doing okay?
Yes.
And it was just like, oh, this is so brutal. Mm-hmm. Amazing work.
Yeah. I think this, it's very interesting. And anyway, so the sit-down was interrupted by Jay White and Juice Robinson, who attacked Kenny. They were whacking him with a board. Great shots of JR kind of standing there like, I guess the interview is over. Ooh, this ain't good, but I'm just going to shuffle on out.
So funny.
Amazing comedy work from JR.
The cuts to JR, I was just like, sometimes wrestling is art, actually.
I'm willing to say it. I think, Tony, if JR wants to continue working, you may give him another contract, but it is only to do these interviews. And he can be backstage if that brings him joy, but it's not commentary. He can't do that anymore.
He can't be in a position to be saying Jezebel. We just can't have that. No.
But he can do commentary, therapy, mediation, anything where someone just needs to kind of be there looking like, ooh, that's troubling. But definitely is helping me understand you better.
Do we need to put, like, specifically for the men on the roster as who he gets to do? Like, let Renee continue to interview the women?
I think he could be okay interviewing the women because it's not as easy to be in a position where you're going to call someone a Jezebel to her face. So that might be safer for him than
that's
commentary.
True.
But I agree. You know what? I'm going to say we should do a test run. And we shouldn't commit to airing those interviews before someone has just listened to them and thought about them.
Thought maybe we could sub Renee in here. And maybe Renee wouldn't say this about someone's body or whatever.
Maybe Renee and JR could tag team some therapy sessions.
I would love that, actually.
That would be interesting.
I think that chemistry could be, I'm intrigued. I would love to see what comes out of that.
Well, you heard it here first. Okay, so later on in the ep, we got a promo from Hangman. Hangman had accompanied Kenny to the hospital, and he was drinking out in the parking lot. He gave Bullet Club Gold some notes on their beatdown abilities. He was basically like, if you're going to come to a beatdown, you should do a better job. And then he said that he and Kenny and Coda are going to kick their asses at Wembley. We got this great little thing where someone came out and dinged him for drinking and said, sir, this is a hospital. So he chugged the rest of his beer. Unclear if he has his drinking under control or if it's in danger of getting out of control again. We don't know. I don't think.
Yeah. I kind of love the tease. It could go either way, you know, so.
And it could depend on what happens.
On what
when
happens.
When he's fighting alongside Kenny's other ex-boyfriend at Wembley.
Yep.
That puts
That's
us
one
in
of those
emotional danger zone.
Emotional danger zone, exactly.
I think you two are being negative. I think that's just a man that knows that it's inappropriate to tip out a beer on hospital grounds. Come on.
It's true. You got to chug it. Basically, to be polite, you do have to chug it. That's
and when
so
any
true.
Of us go to the hospital with our friends, you know, you've got a little, you got to have a little beer in the parking lot.
I always have a beer with me. Yeah, of course. what do you guys think about this match for Wembley and then overall about the kind of the Bullet Club Gold moving into the elite sphere right now?
I'm a big fan of Bullet Club Gold. Like, it's Jay Wyatt. Like, this is, I know that the internet, because the internet gets upset at things, I know the internet got a little upset with how they introduced Jay Wyatt and kind of had him. It was a very slow roll. I think everybody can agree there.
Yeah.
But getting him back into the elite sphere is absolutely the right thing to do. As much as I love House of Black, if I could pick just one act to cross over from Collision to the part of AEW that we actually care about, it would absolutely be Bullet Club Gold.
Bring them home.
Bring
we
them
need
home.
Them.
And I'd... Allie, forgive me if this is jumping ahead a bit, but I know that the internet has also been a little upset about Kenny Omega not being in a singles match.
yes, they were.
Like there, but there is, you know, you two talking specifically there about Hangman being in the middle of Kenny and Coda and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with getting to still see Kenny Omega do amazing things. Mm-hmm. But then you also have all of these other, you know, angles from which to come at. And you've got to get Takeshita on the show. He's not going to be on the sidelines. If you've got Kota Ibushi, thank God we didn't just sign him up for one show and then sent him back to Japan.
Yeah.
He's going to get lost if you send him on an airplane that often. We needed to keep him over here for a little while.
So
it's just, this is one thing. I think I wrote this is one match where I do feel like this could have had considerably more build to it. But like you all have also said about some of the other matches, now that it's made, I am fully on board. This is going to be an incredible performance. This is the exact kind of match that for every other pay-per-view in AEW's existence, you've gone into it and you're like, I don't really know what the storyline really is going to be in the ring here. And then you leave the match and it's like, oh, this was fucking incredible. Why was dumb for doubting this? So this is going to be outstanding.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think this one is also a little interesting just because, like, we've had some of those matches before where it's like, I don't really know what the storyline is going to be because this isn't the conclusion of a storyline. This feels a little different to me in that I'm like, there's a lot of history going around here. This feels like it is going to start some storylines. Like,
I like that.
And that is, like, as interesting to me as a match that is clearly going to wrap up a storyline.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, like, it is, like, the elite matches in this haven't had as much build as, like, the other matches in general. And, like, I assume that's just because of, like, they just re-signed, you know, all that kind of external stuff. But it's like, yeah, when you look at them putting this together, it's like, A, they are maximizing, like, the people on the card. Like you said, like, having Ibushi and Takeshita and everybody there is phenomenal. And then, like, the Hangman Kenny Ibushi stuff is going to be incredible, I'm sure. And then, like, I don't feel like I'm as aware of, like, Bullet Club Gold's, like, history with them, but it's like, I like those guys and it's going to be a great match. And
I mean, I've
totally
seen
does
some
feel
pictures
like the start
that suggest that Jay White and Hangman have history. I don't understand that history, but let me tell you now, listeners, I want to, because I like what I've seen.
Yeah, Allie linked a little GIF here with Hangman and Jay White facing off, where Hangman's doing kind of a little Mox-esque, getting his space sexy showdown.
Yeah,
thing
and when
that
the men
I'm
give each other the up
in.
Down, if anyone has some resources for us, please provide them, because I'm in my leisure. I'm in my leisure to do a little extracurricular learning about this because I want to be ready. Mm-hmm. I want to be ready.
No.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. I think that we've pretty much kind of talked about the amount of setup we got. It kind of is what it is. Do we want to talk about the behind-the-scenes factors impacting some of this week? Does that interest us? Just briefly touch on it?
It's been a little wild week from the CM Punk decides to leak something every day situation.
We did have a wild little week. It did impact the product a little bit because CM Punk apparently banned Hangman from coming to film something at Collision. I mean,
it was a very brief promo. We just talked about it. It was like 30 seconds in a pretend ambulance bay. Like,
just really doesn't seem like something. What did Dave say? He wasn't allowed in to keep the peace.
Yeah, to keep the peace. And then we found out that Punk has banned like five other people from Collision. And then he kept putting out like increasingly insane rationales that just kept making him look worse, I would say. And then like
it's
starting to just be like, well, Jungle Boy is also bad. So
it's very funny to watch someone who has no ability to be like, less is more in this situation. Probably the less I engage with this, the better it's going to go. The other thing that happened was that CM Punk did cut a promo after Collision this past week where he was just a crazy insider baseball like promo where he was like, Hangman doesn't sell merch and he's a peg warmer because his his figurines are always on the shelves in Walmart or whatever, and the crowd didn't like it, and so he kind of about faced afterwards and like publicly was like, I sent Hangman an apology text and I was just trying to get the program going. It is becoming increasingly clear that CM Punk is trying to get a lot of programs going, none of which are the programs he's actually booked in. So that is interesting. The man won't shut the fuck up.
It's getting so boring. It's just like,
I've had it.
I really enjoyed the little period where he was just sequestered on Collision. I didn't have to watch it. And everyone was just talking about all the great matches people on Dynamite were having and like pretty much ignoring him because he's having boring feuds and not doing anything. And then he was like, oh, I'm still here. Don't worry about that. I'm still being a little bitch all the time.
I agree. I'm so sick of anywhere you go on the internet to read about wrestling, you can't get away from the stuff CM Punk was doing until today. Yeah. But
his little friend decided to take a little leap for him.
We'll talk about that later. In a minute.
Yeah. But the thing about it all for me still is just the fact that one of the people that he's apparently like had gently escorted from the collision grounds was Ryan Nemeth. Like, if you are CM Punk, if you have been at the top of the two most successful wrestling companies in America for the last 20 odd years, however long it's been since WCW folded, and you can't just brush off a tweet and maybe like some comments. I saw one post from somebody, one tweet from somebody that said that maybe Ryan Nemeth had said a few things during one of his stand-up shows, which means seven people saw it. I love you, Ryan Nemeth, but it's true.
Saw it. Wow.
Yeah, it's like, why are you watching Ryan Nemeth's stand-up clips yeah. online?
But if somebody of Punk stature just cannot get over somebody of Ryan Nemeth's placement on the totem pole, or, you know, it just...
Yeah.
It says so much about somebody that I just don't want to see on the television or read about on the internet.
It's just such like classic bullying behavior. It's just like the yeah. lowest guy in the totem pole. And it felt that way when he was going after Colt too, but it was like at least yeah. they were like friends and had history. But it's like poor little Ryan Nemeth. It's just like
he's just a little guy. Yeah. He's just a little guy and he's out there making content promoting the SAG and WGA strikes, and good for him. And yes. Go to hell. I mean, it's like, I don't think we enjoy talking about CM Punk at this point, and we don't really want to, but it's in here because it's like, it's impacting the product. It's impacting yeah. like the, you know, shit backstage. He won't shut up. It's like, everyone yeah. is trying to move on, dude. And we'll let you be on Collision. Do anything you want on Collision. But it's like, yeah. if you don't treat people well, and your behavior doesn't change, I don't know why you expect other people to want to work with you or to, you know, give you what you want. You just think you deserve everything that you want and you're entitled to it. Well, yeah. you're not.
And you think how much more likely he would be to actually get these programs that he wants if he, like, put his head down, stopped leaking shit all the time, and, like put actual effort into having like a good feud with Jay White and was just like, look, I'm going to do my best. Like, I'm going to like yes. put some other guys over. Like, I'm going to let other people be on Collision, even if they're friends with people I don't like. Like, if he got the Dark Order over there, you know, like he could buy some goodwill yeah. by just like being decent. Like, it wouldn't be that hard, but he's just like incapable of it.
He's incapable of it. And it was crazy to read about, you know, the confrontations with Ryan Nemeth where he's being like, you're making the company look bad. And it's like, you just did an interview and a promo mm-hmm. that you weren't supposed to talk about any of this shit. You're supposed to just be like, we're moving on. And you drag Hangman back into it. You drag the mm-hmm. Bucks back into it. You are the one who won't shut the fuck up. And you think Ryan Nemeth's little tweet is the problem?
Yeah, and I think Ryan Nemeth was like, oh, I'm not supposed to react to what's on TV. And it's like, literally, like, you said it on national television, but
right.
Ryan Nemeth's
and CM
tweet
said
to 20 people.
It would not be appropriate at this point, no, problem. Or something. It's like, good girl, Lord. You have got to get right with yourself.
Absolutely crazy.
But he won't. Oh. But he won't, and he can't. And it's but it like, sucks cause it's Tony, like shut him up.
Yeah, and there's 2 hours of Tony TV can't. Time that's just, like, languishing with, like, just, like, FTR and Punk running around when there's like yeah. 100 other people on the roster. So it's
yeah, maybe
dumb.
some of the people in the IWC being like, Dynamite sucked this week and there's too much stuff in it, blue chunks. It's like, wow, I wonder why there's too much stuff when it's like we yeah. are not allowed to put people on this other programming time that we have available to us.
Right. It's like OC appears to be banned. Like Christopher Daniels isn't allowed to show up. Like, sure,
I said this already somewhere that I think you may have seen it, Anne, but For those who know, it really is starting to feel like that episode of Gilmore Girls where everyone is quitting the paper because Paris is such an insane editor, but she just keeps being like, I can do it myself. And she builds a little bunker in the newsroom at Yale and is just living in there, drinking like soup that she has on a little, you know, heater in there and just being like, I can do the paper by myself. And it's like, you can't, it has to be at press in 3 hours. And she's like, I have a schedule, I'll get it done. And it's like that, except that like the dean keeps coming by and being like, you're doing amazing. Punk, you're doing so good in there.
no problems here. The dean's like standing outside the door being like, don't go in there to keep the peace to the reporters. Great.
He's actually got it under control. So just, he's all good. You're doing amazing.
I'm assuming in this case, the dean would have to be the dean from Community. So I'm really enjoying this crossover at this point.
That's a good picture. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, let's check in on what's going on with the rest of the elite, aka the Bucks. So the Bucks are only fighting brother tag teams right now, which I love for them. They said, we value brothers, we will fight brothers. They fought the Guns in the main event this week. Did the Guns challenge them? Is that what happened? Does anybody know?
No idea.
Not a clue.
And you know what? It's okay. I said it. It's okay not to know. We don't know. But they did fight them. This match I thought was pretty good. I mean, people are so mean to the Guns, but they're my little babies, and I thought they did well, actually.
Yep. Yeah.
I really liked it. I was angry with the Bucks for interrupting the Guns intro. That is the best, the best like ring entrance in the company right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it was a solid match. It was a very, very good match. The Guns, I wasn't a huge fan of them beating the Acclaim for the tag belts back in the day, but that run that they had was actually very good at solidifying them. They've gotten so good, so fast in the ring. So, you know,
thank you, Jeff.
Love to hear that. Yeah.
I'm someone who knows
what's
enough.
Good in the ring.
Yeah. Like, people are so used to being mean to them, so they just keep being mean. But as you said, they've improved so much.
They have. They genuinely have. Like, there were a lot of like small things that they did in there. Like they introduced some good double team maneuvers. I always love a good fluid double team move. They just don't do enough of them anymore. Both of them, I haven't seen them since they've been over on Collision. Like I am the last holdout here of having not
None
watched an
have,
episode
yeah.
of Collision. Yeah,
that's true. That's, we did.
You watched at least some
one match. Yeah.
I think Leah watched the whole episode, if I recall correctly.
She may have had much of the episode on. Yes, I believe.
But
maligned
so
in her absence.
Maligned.
Miss you, Leah.
I hadn't seen them for a while, but you know, Colton still has, I'll say it, the weird gangliness to his body, but he's, you know, looks stronger in it. Austin just looks like, you know, he's just a rock at this point. Like, they look so much better than they did. They're wrestling so much better than they were. They have matured. It is.
They certainly have.
It was a very, very good match. And I love that the Bucks are just fighting. They're just out there having some fun, man.
Having their best.
They said,
life.
That's our, Tony, we'll sign back on. We'll do what you want. We will be fighting brothers. It's so important to us to maintain a strong brother fighting culture in this company. And if there's one thing that we can say AEW still stands for, it is brothers. And it is the safety of brothers.
And you know, when
they'll be together.
When they're going to rejoin the tag team, like, that's the way to make them feel comfortable at the outset. It's like brothers
absolutely.
Only, you know?
Absolutely. I know they were worried about feeling uncomfortable, but they feel comfortable because they have other brothers with them.
It is just so nice to watch them do tags again. It feels like very like, oh, we're getting back to basics here. Like the whole episode of Dynamite felt to me is like, oh, this felt like an older Dynamite where it was like chaotic and there were a lot of things.
Yeah.
They featured the people that I liked instead of all the people I don't like and good stuff. The Guns really have a lot of showmanship too. That entrance, I love it so much.
That is the thing is like, I do think, I understand it is important that wrestlers be able to wrestle in the ring. I do think that is true.
Granted.
I agree with it. And even I can tell usually when I'm like, this isn't that good in terms of wrestling. But it does also matter that like some people just naturally have that like, I'll throw myself into it. I'll do anything. I have a big personality. I have charisma. Like, I will make any situation work for me. And the Guns do have that. And they have taken so many opportunities that they've been given and run with them. Like, clearly, like, thrown themselves into it. And we could point to, I'm sorry, but we could point to many other people in the company who got those chances and got a push and did not give half the energy that the guns have given to their chances.
It's so true. Like, every minute of TV time the guns get, they are, like, putting their whole soul into it. It's incredible. Whereas, yeah, your Wardlow maybe kind of falls apart at those moments. So, yeah.
Oh, God, I forgot Wardlow existed. Oh, that's right? Unfortunate.
Yeah. I know.
That'll happen, yeah.
I remembered because I saw a thread the other day where someone was, you know, it's a bunch of people being like, Tony really dropped the ball on Wardlow. And it's like, you know, sometimes people drop the ball on themselves. And we have to be able to acknowledge that. That's really true.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the only person in the ring getting over or not getting over is the wrestler. And,
you know,
you can do it or you can't. The guns can do it. The guns can do it, and I know because they have convinced people who were haters, who are like, oh, you know what?
Maybe those on this podcast, there's those, actually. Yeah. I feel pretty good about it.
Was I a gun hater?
No, Jeff was.
She meant me.
Oh, Jeff. I think I've always loved
No, you've always been a gun lover, yeah.
Well, speaking of guns, no, we won't get to that yet.
Oh, bum, bum, bum.
But, okay, so, after this match, I think it was Juice and Jay came out. Bullet Club Gold came out. They were beating up the Bucks. The Bucks won. They did beat the guns. who could possibly come save them? Kenny and Hangman are at the hospital drinking. FTR came out. And they came out.
Unpleasant.
And they saved the Bucks.
Music hit and I had a visceral I hate this I hate these people and I thought it was Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. I was like, I can't believe these guys are coming out. And then I was like, and FTR came out. I was like, oh no, I just had a music reaction and I identified the wrong people.
It's hard.
You imagine Jeff Jarrett coming out and then it somehow got worse.
Yeah. It was even worse. Yeah.
This was really rough for me right at the end of the show when, you know, it's like the Bucks really gave it their all. They did a good job for the guns. And then we got to see fucking FTR saving them. And then they teased attacking them, but they didn't. And the men just all had a standoff. Can we just really quick talk about what do you think I was supposed to take away? So it was a baby facing move to come out and save your enemy is a baby facing move for sure. Mm-hmm. It's to be I respect you and want to fight you, which is really not FTR. And but then to immediately then tease attacking your enemy is girl, what are you doing? So what am I supposed to think about these guys?
Setting aside
the non-kayfabe stuff going on.
Well, and I feel the non-kayfabe stuff does, it's the opposite of a work shoot, where it's everything FTR ever says is the Bucks suck, they won't put us over, they're ruining my life. And then they come out and they're we saved you and we respect you. And you're well, you're going to have to be a little more of an adult in public on your little Twitter if you want me to buy this. I don't know.
So true. It's also just weird that we talked about this last week a little bit, but the FTR have the belts and they're obsessed with belts and they always have been. They really care about belts. Mm-hmm. They have the belts. It does not make sense in this storyline that FTR are we have to save the Bucks because we need to fight the Bucks. It would make sense if the Bucks had the belts and they were we need to make sure that you're okay to fight because we have a chance to get those belts from you. Mm-hmm. In reverse, and it would make sense if they were different characters, you could make this make sense. But because FTR are the people they are, it's this is absolute literal nonsense. This is not logical.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels obviously, you know, they're coming after the Bucks because they want to prove that they are the best tag team of all time. But if you're going to have the entrance video with 10 times top guys to be up there counting your number of world titles, I don't think they understand that they're really kind of denigrating themselves. They are not behaving up to the stature that they want us to look at them with by constantly chasing, this really, really MJF and Adam Cole are hitting the beat that FTR needed to be bringing to this. And they're not. You all said it last week. They really are acting desperate here, trying to prove something that nobody is going to believe even if they win. And they know that nobody is going to believe it even if they win. And the Bucks are wrestling a brother tag team because it's fun.
Yeah, the Bucks just don't care. They're like, we'll wrestle the guns. Like, we're not trying to prove anything.
Yeah. I think if it were a purposeful character note that it's like, you have the belts, but that's mm-hmm. not enough for you. Like, you just, like, because it turns out the belts don't fill the hole. Mm-hmm. And, like, you still feel need and are having trouble dealing with that. If they knew that's what they were doing, or if I thought they knew that's what they were doing, that could work.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what they're doing. I don't think it's what they mean to be doing. I think they just want this match with the Bucks, and so this is how they're doing it. And I kind of think, I don't think that the Bucks are sandbagging them in the feud, but I think that, I don't think that they are giving a lot of help and guidance about this is how we would do it. I think they're being like, you want the match, so we're happy to do it the way you want to do it. And it's like, it would be better. It would be better if they were calling the shots, but they're not.
No. And honestly, good for them. Like, let FTR just
I agree.
Fall. Yeah. But no, it's true. It's like MJF is like purposefully playing a character who like has this deep insecurity that's constantly coming out. And Dax isn't doing it purposefully, but he just is a person whose deep insecurity is constantly coming out. And so he can't like calibrate himself as a heel or a face correctly at all, just from lack of self-awareness.
Yeah. Anyway, and then another news with FTR, Cash got arrested because he was driving his car and he had road rage and like did a thing.
Pointed
what do you do with a gun?
At someone.
Pointed a gun at someone while like speeding by them.
Yeah.
And we don't really know how that's going to play out yet. And I've seen plenty of people just be like, oh, it seems like it's actually not a big deal. And you've heard me say it on the podcast before. It is a big deal because guns are bad and gun culture in America is gross. And it is, to me, an extreme sign of really needing help if you are just pointing guns at people who make you mad on the road. I'll say it. I'll come out there and say it. To me, that's really unchill. I don't like hearing about it. I find it really scary.
Yeah.
And even if in the lawless state of Florida, he gets off with a misdemeanor, I don't really think that people should be allowed to do that and just still be high profile wrestlers in your company without getting punished. And that is the stance that I will take.
Yeah.
Bold.
You know, it's crazy, it's but
it's
someone's
got
to go there.
When someone really idolizes the wrestlers of the 80s who like to, you know, like murder people in locker rooms and stuff, like maybe their conception of masculinity is not really well calibrated.
Kind of dangerous. What's a word we could use? Toxic?
Yeah, that's a good word.
Well, we can always workshop it later. We don't have to say that one.
Wild. And it's still unclear, isn't it, if AEW knew about it before today.
We don't know.
That's, you know, you would think that one of two things was true. Either Cash didn't tell anybody at AEW about this before today, or Tony Khan has known about it since and has decided to, you know, push on with the booking of the Young Bucks match for All In.
Well,
you know,
but it happened before. It happened on July 27th.
Yeah.
And they didn't announce call the Bucks out until like August 5th or something, I think.
Yeah.
So that's where it's just like, I guess if I were Tony, regardless of like my feelings about pointing guns at people from cars, I would just be like, this easily seems like it could kind of blow up into a thing.
Yeah.
And maybe this isn't a good time to do a really high profile match.
Yeah,
for these guys.
Like if someone's charged with a felony, that means they may not be able to get into the country their match is in. Like maybe just hedge your bets and not book them for the match. That seems like the smart thing to do. Even if I do think he probably will plead down or whatever. But it's still
I mean, he's in fucking Florida, so they'll let him do anything down there. I think. I was honestly shocked to hear that he'd been arrested for it. It's crazy.
Crazy.
Well,
wild.
We will see what happens, I suppose. And that's all we can say. Should we talk about a tag team we like a little more? And it's called Better Than You, Bebe.
Yeah.
And they know it. MJF and Adam Cole this week on Dynamite did a pre-tape where they went to the Outback Steakhouse together to research their enemy, Aussie Open. I think this was MJF's idea. Adam Cole was just thrilled to be eating at Outback Steakhouse. MJF was like, I need you to take this seriously. But instead, they just both ate some Bloomin' Onions, had a great time, were really full.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
I love that they just go on a date every single week. It's just we get to see them having a great time somewhere, just the two of them.
And you know what? They seem to have really fun dates. Even when they don't think they will, they have a good time together.
They're putting in a lot of effort. Like, they're planning stuff, and they just love being together.
That's so sweet to think about them at home being like, ooh, what should I have? What should I take MJF to do this week? I want to do something really fun. But something a little out of the ordinary. Maybe something he hasn't done before.
Hmm. Yeah, that's when you like somebody, is when you're when you're thinking stuff like that. Yeah.
So now, my big question out of all of this, how do we take the fact that MJF liked Outback Steakhouse? It's like, is this a step too far for us to maintain our plausible deniability of professional wrestling?
I don't think so, because like part of the whole MJF deal is that he's like, I'm really high class, but then he has that Burberry scarf and it's like, it's kind of pedestrian, actually. It's like, actually in some ways it's kind of lowbrow, like, cause it's like that scarf is what they're selling people, like that's like just to make money at the bottom level, basically, while rich people buy like real stuff that you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell at a glance as Burberry. Mm. So to me, I'm like, I don't know, it's kind of right to me that MJF would be like, oh, this is for plebs. But then he gets in there and he's like, oh, it's pretty good, though.
So MJF's scarf is the Bloomin' Onion of neckwear.
Kind of.
All right. All right.
Do you think I'm wrong, or am I like misinterpreting fashion here? I mean,
I think that's right. I think MJF is like a social climber more than like an actual rich guy.
Nouveau rich.
Yes, very nouveau rich for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's new money. That's tacky as hell. Yeah.
We don't have time to unpack all that.
I remember once as like a teen, I was watching like some kind of like Housewives of Orange County or something, but it was very rich people, but they were all like they were in their house. And I remember seeing it and I was like 16 and like what came into my head was like, ugh, new money. And then I was like, where did that come from? Like, where have I learned this concept? I was like, I don't think anyone's ever exactly said that to me, but I actually like, then I thought about it and I was like, oh, like I know like what private school in my town is like the old money school and what's the new money school, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, I've just been absorbing this. That's disturbing.
That really makes you think.
And people say America doesn't have class.
Oh.
Class system, not, you know, classiness.
Both.
I don't think we have classiness, but we do have a class system. Yeah, it's a little less clear cut than some other places. Okay, so then MJF and Adam Cole went backstage. They were, I don't know what they were doing. They were pretending to be Crocodile Dundee. They were doing accents. They're wearing hats. I think they wanted to try this new tag move that they'd come up with called the kangaroo kick.
MJF does it. It looks so dumb.
MJF funny. Came up with that. It was Adam Cole was, of all the things he hasn't been on board with, this was the least on board that Adam Cole has been.
That's true. Sometimes each of them goes too far.
I love it, though, that it's like the thrill of having a friend has made MJF go loco in the brain, where he's I want to do cool, fun stuff with my friend. I'm coming up with the most uncool stuff, but when I do it with my friend, it's going to be so cool. And then,
it's
actually
like exactly like a sixth grade boy when they're like, I'm with my friends and I'm being so cool right now. And they're doing like the dumbest stuff you've ever seen. And that's like, that's when most people are sort of making their first like real adulty friendships, you know, but MJF's just hitting it now.
So sweet. They did get yelled at by Tony Khan, I think, for kangaroo kicking backstage.
They double clotheslined a poor staff.
Oh, they double clotheslined someone backstage. Yeah. That's fun. I'm glad they had fun. I'm glad they had a fun date. That's all I really care about. Just that they had a fun date. TK did yell at them, and they, like sixth grade boys, were just like, I don't care. he'll be sorry. They were a little cowed, clearly, but then they had to be like, it's fine. It's not a big deal.
Little principal's office action. Yeah.
Little principal's office. Okay. And so then either immediately after that or later in the show, we got an in-ring promo segment where they came out together and they were kind of chatting. And then they got into the meat of the issue of Adam Cole being like, but when we fight for this belt, I'm going to win. I'm going to fight really hard and I'm going to win because I need that belt. And he cut a little promo. And honestly, I don't really remember. And then MJF cut a promo in return where he really got into like his backstory of how he brought up, the second he mentioned a car again, I was like, danger, Will Robinson. We are going back to that blowjob death story. But he, thank God he didn't. He just put a lot of miles on it because he was doing his wrestling. I thought, whew, we got off scot-free here. He talked about how much work he put in. He talked about the importance of the original All In. He talked about the importance of the Elite, really putting the company over, putting like All In, like the upcoming show over as a really big deal. I was kind of mad at the crowd. I was like, I need you to cheer louder for this, right? Actually. I need you to get into it a little more because we're doing important myth building here.
Yeah. And this was really like after a week of Punk nonsense. I felt like there were a lot of little shots throughout the episode, and MJF like really building up the Elite, the original All In, and his personal belt that is the real belt. It was good.
Yes, he. Of course, we've spent the past month or couple months or whatever with Punk has been doing his like I'm the real world champ bit where he has his belt that I guess he never gave back. It's like it's kind of like he just like took a laptop home that he wasn't supposed to take home and then was just like, it's my laptop now, though. I'm logged into my iCloud account. MJF has been fully no-selling it, and he really doubled down on no-selling it here and was like, this belt matters. Like, this, I worked really hard for this belt. I will protect this belt. No mention of any other belts. Very interesting. Very interesting.
If Punk's trying to push progress, he's not getting very far, which makes it crazy. Like, it's insane that Collision is just full of Punk cutting promos on people who will not acknowledge his existence. It's not good television.
It's almost like one group of people are professionals that stick to a script, while the other person is CM Punk. So
it really, really makes you think,
Yeah. This was so good, though. I feel like we could have been doing, I mean, whatever, I'm totally fine with the build at this point, but it's like to be building up All In like this is just like, if it seems so important to do and so good to do, and especially if they want to keep doing it year to year, it's just like really good to have MJF really build it.
Yeah, and I don't feel that clear about that. I mean, I think it would make sense to do it as an annual show, but I don't think that you can do All In, All Out every year.
No,
like, I don't even
terrible.
Think it should be happening this year. And I think I were Tony, I would really regret all the people I said yes to, trying to placate them to make this happen, because it has led to quite a muddied build that is really satisfying no one except me, because I've decided not to care that much. And I'm just like, well, I like what I like, and what I don't, I won't watch.
Well, and it's, you know, I'm going to dive headfirst into the no facts part of this. You know, you're talking about building up, you know, the build for All In and All Out. You know, this title match, do we actually have something for All Out to follow up whatever happens with anything between MJF and Adam Cole? Like
presumably we will, but like, yeah, it's really like, I'm assuming whatever happens will set up the week, the next week, but it's crazy to just have 1 week to do something important.
It almost feels like whoever winds up winning between the two of them, there's going to have to be an immediate rematch at All Out. And so we have to just kind of hope that they have factored that into the story. Like, are we going to be able to hit two good, satisfying beats that close to one another?
Well, I think that Joe Lands on Voices of Wrestling said that CM Punk did want to do the feud with MJF, and that MJF turned it down and doesn't want to do it, which is clear from, like, you know, from context clues of watching the show.
Yes.
But I think that Punk was hoping that he was going to get that All Out match. And you're exactly right that it's like, after we get the tag match and the main event of All In, what is there for MJF and Adam Cole at the next show? Jeff, do you want to talk a little bit about what you think we might be heading towards? Because I know that you think that All In might be kind of like, you think we might get the split there. I'd love to hear you talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel like the way that the story is building, I know that everybody is loving this. I'm lumping myself in with that. I think MJF and Adam Cole are loving this, but I just get the, like, you have to get Chekhov's Roddy in there somewhere. Like, he has got to be a part of this. And I think that, as I kind of like fantasy book my life away going forward, I just feel like there is so much more fertile ground with a face MJF, like somebody that has been turned on by the first real friend that he has had, and letting the fans continue to embrace him as our scumbag. While Adam Cole, who to me, you all are welcome to disagree, but to me, Adam Cole is so much better as a heel than he is as a
absolutely.
Face.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He is such a sweet little boy outside of that ring, but inside of that ring, he is a slime golem. but, you know, I just get the feeling that that match is going to end with Roddy and the Kingdom coming down. And big surprise, Adam Cole has been working with them to sort of either, not necessarily, I don't know that having planned it all along would really work out with the way that Roderick Strong has been behaving, but having gone to Roderick Strong in the Kingdom and been like, oh, I'm sorry, I've been ignoring you, Roddy. I really am still your best friend. You're still my best friend. By the way, if you wanted to come throw a backbreaker at MJF during a crucial point of the match, that would be great. And so then, you know, we've got heel Adam Cole elevating the Kingdom up a little bit as his lackeys. And then you've got face MJF going off to do, you know, some new territory. It just feels like we're going to get that split. And I'm kind of hoping that's the way that it breaks.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I don't know how to put this. So the way that, like, wrestling timing works, like, is often things will happen faster than is really appropriate, but you just kind of give it to them because you're like, it's wrestling. But if it were a TV show that were scripted, I would be like, no, we need more time for that. So I do acknowledge that what I'm about to say is, like, it's wrestling, so kind of they can do whatever they want. I think this would be a very delicate time for MJF to be betrayed and still be a face. I don't know that I really feel like as a character, he's in a place where he would be able to be betrayed, but be like, I'm still pretty much a good guy, instead of immediately snapping back and being like, you know what? I was right the whole time. You never should trust anyone. You shouldn't be nice to people. You shouldn't make friends. And like, people fucking suck. So that is a thing that I have a little bit of a worry about. Even though, like, I like stuff that you're saying and I think it makes sense, I do have questions about what MJF could or would look like after that. And I think, yeah, go ahead, Anne.
I was just thinking, well, you're thinking like that Roddy and the Kingdom might team up with Adam Cole. I was like, it would also be interesting if...
I hope you're going to say what I think you're going to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, if they teamed up with MJF instead. If MJF got turned on by Adam Cole and then he joined like the ex-boyfriends of Adam Cole who were really mad at Adam Cole.
And that's what it's all about in this company. Ex-boyfriends unionizing.
That's right. You've got to unionize against that guy who keeps doing everyone wrong. And then he could be kind of bitter and angry still, but still in kind of the face position, because Adam Cole's the one who like turned on him and was the worst behaved one. I don't know if it would really work, but I'm just kind of like talking.
It's not impossible. Right, I see stuff there. I also had a thought aligned with my OC Yuta thought from earlier, where I'm like, it would be interesting to have Roderick Strong intervene so that Adam Cole does get the belt, but that MJF thinks he's been betrayed, but Roddy wasn't working with Adam Cole. He's just like, I'm going to destroy this friendship.
I would enjoy Roddy Strong purposefully making them think that they turned on each other, which would not be hard to do because they both are ready to believe it at any moment.
That's true.
The one thing I would be kind of not mad about at this point, but it's not even that I'm opposed to Adam Cole and Roddy Strong working together, MJF and Roddy Strong working together. I think you could make it work, but I don't want it to be that Roddy Strong has been acting this whole time, because it's so important to me that he be a legitimate, pathetic man who is kicking cars and breaking his foot and yes. ruining his life because he's so mad about what's happened. You can't take that away from me. It has to be real.
So true. So true.
I can support that. I will say, if I can double back just real quick, you know, when you're talking about MJF not necessarily behaving face-like, if he got turned on by Adam Cole, I agree with that completely. I think, like, the part of this is, though, I really think that the fans are just, like, desperate to cheer for MJF for a prolonged period of time. In that situation, I think that you would wind up with MJF could still act like MJF and get the cheers, because that is exactly what's happening right now. Yeah. And, you know, especially if we're talking about, you know, the 7-day stretch here, like, in my fantasy book, and that 7-day stretch in between, like, if he gets turned on by Adam Cole at All Out, or All In, rather, and then you've got the rematch at All Out, you know, in that 7 days, you can make just about anything work. Like, you can absolutely get the fans to continue cheering for him for that 7-day period, because, you know, 7 days is not a long time. And, you know, everybody, you know, just like if a podcast host doesn't miss 7 days in a row, she never really missed a week of the podcast.
Wow. Shut it down. Shut it down. No plant behavior on the podcast.
Leah's going to be so pleased with you.
Leah, you're on notice, too.
I promised Leah that I would try to work that in if it was organic. And we because Cash Wheeler pulled a gun on somebody, we skipped the part that I was going to work it into. And so I had to double back around to work that in there.
Well, you were a good friend to Leah, but Leah is on notice from her co-host.
I just feel like Roddy Strong just behind my back teamed up with someone else to take me down.
You know, I think it is, I'm just willing to go with them wherever they go. And I do think the audience wants to cheer for MJF, and I think they will cheer for MJF. I think that narratively, all I keep thinking, though, is that I'm like, if this were Buffy and Spike thought that Buffy actually liked him, and then she turns out she was playing him, that is when we'd get the snap back and he'd be the worst version of Spike he's ever been for a period of at least half a season before he's capable of kind of processing the emotions and being like, you know what, maybe it is good to feel things, even if what you feel after them, the good feelings, is bad feelings. You know what I mean? So I think that's lens that I'm looking at it through. And if they don't do it the way that I would do it, I'll be fine with it, because I'm so laissez-faire these days.
Well, anything they do. That I'm your scumbag thing really is a genius way to try to play the fact that the audience wants to cheer him so bad.
And, it's very good.
And Allie, the only thing I can say too, that is, you are trying to apply actual, like, writing and literary devices to pro wrestling. And so, I do agree with you, though, from, like, a full characterization standpoint. You raise good points, yes.
The conceit of this podcast is and will continue to be that we will apply those real literary narrative conceits, and we will say, read a book. And
read a book.
You think about what you saw in there. Watch a movie and you think about how it operated. And will they do it? Mostly no. But mostly it is our right to call for it. We are very over time, especially, like, even for us. So let's keep going and talk about... we'll talk about Jericho and the Callis family. We could even wrap it up there, but we could do one more thing after that, maybe. Does that sound okay?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So this week, Don Callis and Chris Jericho met in the ring, and Jericho finally responded to Don's proposal that Jericho join his family. And he said, I do. I will join your family. He actually explicitly said, I've been too selfless for the past few years. It's time for me to be a little selfish, which is very funny. Comedy king Chris Jericho, of course. Don Callis, also a comedy king, was visibly startled, but said, oh, well, that's great. Let's go celebrate. So they were going to go celebrate. Jericho, unfortunately, did notice that there was a covered easel in the ring. And he said, what is that? What is that? And Don was like, don't worry about it. It's nothing. It's nothing. Let's just keep going. Jericho was like, is it a gift? Is it a present for me? Because I'm going to join your family. Don said, let's just go. Let's just go celebrate. Jericho said, I'd really like to see it if it's a gift. I want to see it. So he uncovered the easel to reveal a painting of Don holding Jericho's decapitated head in one hand. The men argued, I have written here. Do you guys want to unpack a little of the argument that Jericho and Don Callis had about this beautiful painting?
Chris Jericho said, you were going to have me assassinated because of a business decision. Which is just one
people
of the funniest things that anyone ever said.
People are not giving. I mean, they are giving him credit, but everyone wants to talk about like, oh, Jericho's cooked in the ring. A, he's not, but B, the man is a fucking comedy genius. Shut up. Let him do whatever he wants. He's the funniest man on earth.
Him and Don Callis together, it's just like they achieve such comedy heights in this segment. And it's so funny because like, because of their characters, you don't quite think of them as like comedy boys, but they're so funny and it makes it so much funnier. It's just like, people don't know what wrestling contains, that it can contain moments this sublime.
Contains multitudes. Don Callis has just filled so many different roles over the course of his career. And yeah, I mean, he's can be incredibly threatening and such a wonderful scumbag, but he absolutely can set it up to have somebody else knock it out of the park like this. And it's just absolutely wonderful. I assume some people probably pointed out the similarities between this segment and the Festival of Friendship segment that Jericho and Kevin Steen had back in the WWE, where
you think I know that people so, that out?
Well, you guys. So here's, I should have said this at the start, at the top of the episode. I have almost completely dropped social media at this point because it's run by good nothing but horrible people. So you, I, like every time I listen to your all's episodes, I'm like, oh, is that what people are saying online? You guys are informing me. A lot.
We gotta get off.
So
X.com. But we gotta get out of here.
I hadn't heard this, so please tell us.
So back in the WWE, there was a segment where Jericho and Kevin Owens, who, if anybody in AEW references Kevin Steen from Ring of Honor,
we know Kevin Steen, okay, because he did an interview with Dustin once.
There we go. They had formed a tag team. It really actually took off very well. It was not unlike an MJF Adam Cole pairing once again. This was when Jericho had his list. I don't know if you all are familiar with this, but he managed to turn a clipboard and the phrase, you just made the list, into an incredibly over catchphrase. It was amazing. But
was
they,
it a list of his enemies?
Or? Yes, just like, okay, if you upset love him, it. You made the list, and he would very extravagantly so scribble so on the clipboard. But after a prolonged period of tagging, they had this big festival of friendship that Jericho put together for Owens. And there was an easel in the ring, and it was a painting of Kevin and Jericho together. But then there was also this gift, and it was a new list, and it was... People are going to yell at me if I get this wrong. I believe it was Owens giving Jericho the new clipboard. And, like, Jericho opens it up, and there is just this moment where, like, everything's been super, super happy. And then all of a sudden, his face just falls. And just in the most, like, injured, wounded, confused, gutshot, fawn voice that you've ever heard in your life, Jericho just looks at him and goes, why is my name on this? And then Owens just beats the hell out of him.
Oh, no.
So when you've got, you know, you've got this setup with the easel and you've got these two people coming together that used to work together. And now there's this tension and everything. And, you know, the painting plays into this, you know, it just there are, you know, the parallels there. And in this case, it's interesting to me because, like, this is probably the one time that we've ever seen the Don Callis character doubt himself. Like, if he had just believed that, of course, Chris Jericho was going to join his family because he is Don Callis, then this would have happened. But yes, but that was the Festival of Friendship flashback there.
That's awesome. That sounds so good.
I know. That really lit me up. Wow. You won't ever get yelled at by our listeners. I don't think we have that many listeners who know that much about WWE. But now one of them's going to yell at me. So
like, we're out here.
And you guys never talk about us. Okay, so they have this argument about like their history as friends. They're going at each other. We did get some digs in here that really seemed like punk digs that were, you know, about like Don Callis being like, you weren't even in wrestling 3 years ago and nobody missed you. And it's like, I think he was the president of Impact 3 years ago.
He was absolutely.
Yeah. He was. And then we had Takeshita come out to attack. Oh, they hit each other. Don Callis slapped Jericho. Real flashbacks for me. I mean, and Takeshita came out and was beating up Jericho. And then Ospreay came out, chaired Jericho. Don Callis smashed the oil painting over Jericho's head. Sammy ran out for the save. My God, we had a lot of clown cars. Mm. And that's that. And that is what that is.
And Jericho's gonna fight Ospreay at the.
Oh yes, they're gonna fight. He cut a promo later, and I honestly didn't hear a word of it, and I don't know what was going on, but he was bleeding, and he says, "I'm gonna make you bleed," something like that, probably, if I had to guess. And Will Ospreay looked really, really good. And Jeff, I know that you especially wanted us to talk about this. It was just how good he looked in those sweatpants,
those gray sweatpants, classic,
and just how it really highlighted some assets.
Little call out in Jeff's notes that felt a little shameful, but it was correct. We had, of course, all noted it.
Of course,
it
we
in
had
our
put
own
it
notes.
In our notes. Yes.
And to be clear, what I wrote was, this is well outside of my scope of expertise, but I understand the ways of the world enough to know that you all were going to want to discuss.
When you saw it with your eyes, right?
Yeah,
and you
it's
were like,
just like,
wow, this man is, he's peacocking for the women, and he's showing them something that I know will interest them.
It's like somewhere right now, Dalton Castle is suing for gimmick infringement. That is how much he is peacocking right now.
But he didn't bring any boys with him.
No.
He brought the one, right?
Well, I guess to catch
no, that's not what I meant. I was trying to get on your all's wavelength there. So.
Very nice.
Nice. You were waving harder than I could. You're just doing it exactly right. They're gonna fight.
Was there a connection with Ospreay and Jericho before this? This is like the first time that Ospreay's been involved, right?
Yeah, but I know that they wanted to fight each other. Like, I read this somewhere that they had been putting together, like, they wanted to have a match before the pandemic or something.
Oh,
so,
I think Jericho said that in his promo, maybe, actually.
Yeah, so I think it is a very... I don't think that it has been built recently at all, but I think that for them, it has been in the works for a long time. Yeah.
That's fine. This is one where I was like, this build is nothing, but I feel very magnanimous about it. Like, that's fine. Happy
like,
to watch them fight.
I don't know that I think this is all ultimately going to hang together, but it's fine. It's fine. And I think that they want to fight, and you have to let men fight people they want to fight sometimes. And that's what I sometimes think. I'm like, at the IWC, I'm like, let them do what they want to do. It's like everyone being like, Kenny must give us singles matches. And Kenny is out there being like, I won't come back to AEW if you don't put me in a trio with my friends. Like, just let him do his trios matches. My God, it's his body that he's destroying for you. Let him do what he wants.
I like that you're kind of like the indulgent mother of a toddler. And they're like, he has to eat his vegetables. And you're like, he wants to eat the chicken nuggets. Let him eat them.
I don't even think that's right, because I don't think we should characterize Kenny Omega singles matches as the important vegetables that he must have.
Certainly. You're correct. Yeah, it's a father trying to pressure his child into being a football boy, but
yes,
he wants to be in musical theater.
That's
no.
It. And I say if he doesn't want to play Jeff, he doesn't have to. I'm sorry, it's just you were right there. It was the first male name I could think of.
Are you two trying to say that perhaps that segment of the IWC is equivalent to forcing a child to take unknown metabolic steroids and
turn?
That's
oh my God!
That's a great
come around, bringing it in.
Well. Kenny
they're trying
says,
to feed Kenny some mysterious powders, but no, he's going to do trios.
He can do anything he wants. He's healing in adulthood. He is healing himself.
That's right.
He has friends he loves, and he's really trying to be good about it and be a good normal friend.
And he plays and video games.
I'm sure he'll be great at it.
Yeah.
He'll never get it wrong again. He's healed himself. He's gone to therapy. I feel like I had something else that I really wanted us to talk about here, but I can't remember what it was.
I was surprised to see Sammy after the whole intervention last week.
Yeah.
But do you think we're going to see Sammy fight Ospreay before All In or it All Out? I don't know. I feel like they've got it.
Probably.
If he came out and saved Jericho, I feel like it's on the radar, especially, I don't know. Seems crazy. It doesn't seem crazy. I just don't want to see it. That's all
it's
I mean.
It's just repulsive. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it.
I'm
not
interested
in
it, but I think it's probably like it does make sense, but I just don't want to see it.
Yeah.
How about instead we get a promo where Sammy's just like, Jericho, you have to go fight this match on your own because you have lost our trust. And then Sammy just goes away for 2 weeks and then he can come back to deal with Jericho post pay-per-views.
He doesn't even have to come back and deal with Jericho if he doesn't want to. He
good
could
point.
Go do anything else.
Solid
he could
point.
Do anything else.
Anything
maybe
else.
That's really generous of us.
Maybe Sammy will take a really nice long paternity leave and we won't have to look at him for a while.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
I'd really
paternity
support
leave
him
is
that.
So important for so
it's
many
so
reasons.
So important.
Do you guys want to talk about one more thing or should we call it there?
Well, can we do like Seattle Boys really briefly? Because we are way over. But
yeah, we're way over. I was drinking some gin, so I also haven't been my best timekeeper. Okay, really quick at the end of the episode, let's just talk about what was going on with the Seattle Boys this week. So we had Darby fighting Mogul Embassy henchman Brian Cage on Rampage. And then, I guess there was something with his. Jeff, did you see my note here? I was shocked to know something. No, you don't have to look. It was just that you said, I don't know what's going on with Luchasaurus.
I believe
that something did happen on Collision and that Darby is going to fight Luchasaurus for the TNT title at All Out. I think that was discussed and is technically scheduled. But Darby hasn't talked about it since because he's kind of busy with his storyline that he cares about, I guess.
The TNT title really belongs with Darby, though. Like, that feels right. We need to
absolutely
get back to a Darby-led
it does feel
TNT
right
title.
And if he won the TNT title and brought it into the feud with Swerve and AR Fox, and then you got it on to Swerve or AR Fox,
Lord,
that would
yes
be really fun. That
wonderful.
I mean, Swerve would be able to do, like, a great heel run with that title. So it literally just occurred to me that potentially that is what they're trying to do.
That'd be great.
I don't really know why. I guess because it is more meaningful if Swerve or AR Fox win it off of Darby, I would be guessing.
It's so anything that gets gold on Swerve, finally, I do not care what path that belt has to take to get over to him.
Oh, yeah. Because,
he's
I mean,
so
that
good
man is doing such a good job and doing such good heel work that he is one of the few people of whom I would say, like, yeah, give him a belt, because when heels have belts, they create problems with the belts.
Yes.
And that is, like, he would be great at that, at being like, I have this belt, and it's now I'm going to run roughshod over this roster with it. And that would be really good.
And he really deserves it. Like, and he and Keith Lee, like, lost the tag belts pretty fast because the Acclaim, like, really needed to have them, which, like, they definitely did. But, like, Swerve and Keith Lee would have had, like, such a good run with them, too. And I'd love to see Swerve get to have a nice long run with a belt.
Yeah. Plus, it would be very fun for Darby to get crushed emotionally and physically and then be kind of dealing with the fallout from that. You could do some good stuff there. So
you set up a lot with Nick Wayne and everybody. Like, you've got a whole arena you can do stuff with the belt in.
Yeah. Okay, and so then on Dynamite, Darby and Nick Wayne fought Gates of Agony. Swerve was sitting watching on the ramp. Sometimes people do the ringside, the heels do the ringside watching thing and it doesn't work. Again, I'll say this really worked. I was like, this is a king surveying
absolutely
his kingdom.
Someone with the right amount of charisma sitting up there in a folding chair, like, it's a perfect little
they make that folding chair look like a throne. Not everyone can do it, I'll tell you that. And then Swerve and AR Fox tried to do this post-match beatdown. But Allen and Wayne were prepared with a skateboard and belt as weapons. Thank you so much, Manolo. That's insane. Those are not normal things to be prepared with very well. It's like, he's like, they had some props, so there was nothing that they could do. And then we got a video package on the big screen where Joker Sting had kidnapped Prince Nana, and they were just kind of chatting. And and I think he did some threats. It was a little hard to focus because he really was being the Joker. And so we were having a little back and forth in the group chat about whether it's appropriate for men to be the Joker, why he was being the Joker, how often men want to be the Joker, kind of stuff. But Jeff, you did tell us that there is historic precedence for the Joker Sting.
Yes, yes. Now, I didn't watch a ton of Impact because if you look at their ratings, nobody watched a ton of Impact. but that was, my understanding is that was Sting's persona for most, if not all, of his run there.
How long ago would that have
full
been?
Full Joker run?
Yeah, like he was in Impact for at least a couple of years, I think. But I mean, it was substantial, but you know,
was that like early, like it was like 20 years ago, 10 years ago? What are we talking?
We're probably talking 15 to 20 years ago. Like this was, okay.
That's a more appropriate time to be the Joker than in 2023.
Yes, no.
Or Joaquin.
Yes. I will give you that. Like, I can fully confess. I did not think of the, how do I want to put this? The societal ramifications of taking on that role in 2023 because of all the nostalgia that I have for Sting's various personae over his career. But I was very curious to hear your all's take on seeing him be this more, shall we say, gregarious version of himself here.
It's always very funny to me when Sting talks because it is, especially because of the way that, like, his whole presence and his, when they do the snow and everything is so, like, serene and serious. And actually, anytime he talks, he's not like that. He's like, no, I'm kind of a ham. I love to ham it up. So I didn't mind it. And to be clear, I don't think it's problematic for Sting to be the Joker. It's just funny. Men do love to be the Joker.
I love to be the Joker so much. Yeah, I like totally got into it with Sting because he was so hammy and he was having such a good time. It was just like, I love this for you. Although I do think there should be a societal like moratorium on Batman and Joker for at least 10 years. And I think I've been saying this for about 10 already. So like,
and if we can't do it societally, we could at least do it in wrestling.
Yeah, just, you know, Penta, put the Joker gear away. It's time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't want to.
I think Sting's original version was much more Jack Nicholson. This one was definitely more Heath Ledger, I feel. So, like,
I actually thought it was giving the animated Harley Quinn, the Joker, in that. He was giving a little of that.
Fair.
And you know what? I will actually recommend that show. It is extremely fun. I believe that the fourth season just came out.
Excellent.
And I haven't watched it yet. That's a good reminder to me.
Wow.
That'll be making me happy next week. I think we're all very excited for what we're going to get out of this and excited that it's going to be coffin match at Wembley.
Yes.
I love that they just give Darby so many coffin matches. Like, he needs it. He wants it.
They're always so fun. I know that it would be easy to be like, it's repetitive. And it's just like, but they fucking rock.
I love it every time. Yep.
He throws himself into it. And I mean that so many different ways. But it's going to be so good. Like, the only concern I have with it is the embarrassment of riches that we might get for having the coffin match and the stadium stampede. But I trust all of these men to come up with vastly different forms of violence to inflict upon one another. So this will be such a good time. Yeah.
I hope
poetry.
It was, yeah. And I hope that Tony like paces it out so that we have cool down matches in between. You know, like, give me a little CM Punk bathroom break in between Stadium Stampede and the coffin match. You know, like, I'll take my time. Yeah.
I you know what? You can give him 15, 20 min if you have to. Don't give him 20. You can give him 15, but that's a good amount of time for me to kind of do my thing around here. And,
yeah, I'll go get a snack, use the bathroom, take the dog out. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got stuff to do, so we are going to need those little those little punk breaks. Okay, I think we will wrap it up there. Jeff, thank you so much again for joining us. You are a great guest host, and I hope we'll have you back many more times when probably, you know, Leah, every month she's gone.
Every month.
The show. So
constant traveling.
You're going to be called upon again if I had to guess. On that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Ann.
I've been Jeff.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our show is produced by Marjorie Voinovich. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com, Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We did release a bonus episode this week for some of our five-star reviews. If you give us a five-star review, you can send us something to watch. We will watch it at an unspecified date in the future and release an episode of us watching it. And we're really good at it. We're so good at commenting on the matches, and that's what you'll find when you listen to the episode. And after all that being said, come back.